Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from the hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice, physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley. 1-888-525-HQMP or 4767 for appointments.
Hello once again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Shartok. Joining us today is Dr. Michael Schwepp. He's a board-certified orthopedic surgeon, chief of orthopedic surgery at Northern Dutchess Hospital. He has a special interest in the treatment of sports injuries, as well as total and partial knee and shoulder replacement surgery. Dr. Schwepp completed a fellowship in orthopedic trauma research at Columbia Presbyterian Medical Center in New York. He's a fellow of the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, is a graduate of the United States Military Academy at West Point, and also a certified yoga instructor. Dr. Schwepp, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Alan.
If you want to talk to the doctor, and you should, this is the time to do it. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. And doctor, let me start out, as you know, because I was boring you with it before, I have a torn rotator cuff. And the question for you, sir, is, since I read in the paper that somewhere between 20 and 30% of all Americans will experience a torn rotator cuff, what is that?
Well, Alan, rotator cuff injuries are among the most common injuries that orthopedic surgeons are asked to treat in the United States for exactly the reason that you mentioned. The rotator cuff, what it really is a collection of tendons, and tendons are what connect muscles to bones. So if you picture your shoulder as a ball and socket joint, the ball is actually held in the socket by a group of tendons. And the tendons blend together so that they're so closely aligned that they look like the cuff of a shirt. And that cuff, because it's a high-stress area, can get stretched, thinned, inflamed from repetitive use or from one-time injury.
Repetitive use meaning if you're playing tetherball every day.
Or you're playing specifically overhead sports. Are
tennis?
Tennis.
Uh-huh.
Baseball pitchers.
Uh-huh.
As far as workers, my father was a electrical contractor for many years, and he tore both his rotator cuffs, repetitively working overhead, holding weights overhead, using drills and so on. Those are the types of activities that put the rotator cuff at risk.
Well, I've heard. I spoke to one guy who said that if you get it in one arm, I have it in the right arm, sometimes you get it in the other arm also. How come? Do you know?
I don't know if there's a genetic predisposition to that.
I mean,
there's certainly some research that shows that. But often people that are working overhead, such as like painters and electricians, they'll be using both hands overhead. And that repetitive type of motion is not limited to your dominant arm, although it's more common in the dominant arm, typically.
Yeah. Okay. So let's go to Jim in Matamoros. Okay, Jim, there are four lines. We'll get rid of you fast. Go ahead.
Is the Patchman's operation still being used on anterior cruciate ligament surgery, or is it all TPLO and newer procedures now?
Jim, I'm sorry. I didn't understand. What type of procedure did you mention? I understood ACL surgery, anterior cruciate ligament surgery. What type of surgery?
Well, it's Patchman's, where they thread the fascia through the course of the anterior cruciate ligament.
Yeah, most surgeons in the Western world now use either an autograft or an allograft for ACL reconstruction. So ACL, the anterior cruciate ligament, is one of the main ligaments to stabilize the knee forward to backwards. So it's a ligament that connects the femur, the thigh bone, to the tibia, the shin bone. And when a person has a torn ACL, they will experience symptoms of the knee buckling and giving way, like when going downstairs or with twisting and so on. So the problem with a torn ACL is that the fibers of the ACL don't tend to want to heal together, because the knee, inside the knee, is synovial fluid, which is a lubricant. So whereas somewhere else in the body you could tear a muscle the torn fibers end up scarring to each other. That doesn't happen in the knee. So we discovered, we orthopedic surgeons discovered, a while ago that we need to replace this. And so it's called a reconstruction. And what reconstructs the torn ligament is a tendon, which is very similar in characteristics to a ligament. And that comes either from the patient, him or herself, which is called an autograft, or from a cadaver, which is called an allograft. And so taking fibers to try and reconstruct your own native torn ACL has been tried in the past, and as far as I know, it hasn't really had much success.
It hasn't worked out. Okay, thank you, Jim, from Matamoros. Okay, we'll go to Ann in New Paltz. Okay, Ann, you're on.
Hi. I have a question about chronic patellar tendonitis.
Yes.
I don't know whether it's a contributing factor, but I had Osgood-Schlatter disease as a youngster in that knee. And I've been extremely active all my life, but I've had to give up now any activity that asks the knee to do a completely repetitive motion. Running, cycling. It doesn't bother me rock climbing or yoga or hiking. And I've tried the little pat straps, and I've tried cross-fibering and ice, and I've tried riding a bike and beginning at a 1 minute and stopping and icing, and it's really gotten to the point that even a minute or so on a bike, I can feel the pain there and some warmth. And
yeah.
If I were to persist, I'd have a red bump.
Okay, so now, first of all, doctor, what is the patellar?
All right, thanks, Alan. And thank you, Ann. It's a great question. Patellar tendonitis is a really common condition that we see in the office. The patella is the formal name for the kneecap.
I see.
So the patella tendon is the tendon that connects the kneecap to the shin bone. And you can feel it on yourself if you feel your kneecap and you work your way down to the tibia, the shin bone. Itis, as we were speaking earlier, Alan,
yep.
Itis means inflammation of. So tendonitis is inflammation of a tendon. Ann was describing that she gets tendonitis of the patella tendon anytime she does repetitive activities. And it's a pretty common condition. She also mentioned a condition known as Osgood-Schlatter syndrome. And that is, for people that don't know, that's a condition that is very common in teens. And what it is the inflammation of the insertion of the patella tendon on the shin bone. So right where the patella tendon connecting the kneecap to the shin bone, where it attaches to the shin bone, that area gets inflamed and actually pulls away some of the bone from the shin, forming a little lump. So, and that area, and that you describe, that may in fact be a contributing factor that you have a slightly altered anatomy from the typical standard anatomy of the knee. So, yeah, you may be predisposed to having patella tendonitis when you do these repetitive type sports. And, doing those alternative activities like rock climbing you mentioned and yoga, I support that highly. And if you really do want to go back to doing the more repetitive type things like running or cycling, then I'd suggest, going to see an orthopedic surgeon, because there are treatments that can be done, starting non-surgically with physical therapy, ultrasound, different modalities. And then finally, at the far end of the spectrum, when everything else fails, then there could be a surgery involved. And I'm just, I'm not knowing your case exactly, but picturing in my mind that you have a slight lump at the insertion of your patella tendon where you had the Osgood-Schlatter as a child. Maybe that could be shaved down to prevent it from offending the patella tendon every time you bend your knee.
And thank you very much.
And thank you, Ann. That's great. Appreciate your call. Okay, we'll go to Keith in Albany. Okay, Keith, you're on.
Hey, hello. How are you doing?
We're good.
I have some neck issues. C4 through C7, and some arthritis in the disc, in the neck there. And I was wondering, is there any alternative to the spinal fusion?
Well, first of all, Doc, tell us what spinal fusion is.
Okay, so, well, let me even back up even further to describe what Keith is asking about. He mentioned C4 through C7. So what is that? So C,
go ahead.
C stands for cervical spine. So the cervical spine is the neck. So the seven vertebrae that are connected to the base of the skull and attach your spine to your thoracic spine. At every level between the vertebrae, which are the bones, there are discs.
Right.
So picture everyone's seen the Halloween skeleton. The bones are separated by rubbery discs. When those discs wear out, that contributes to cervical spine arthritis. So one of the treatments for patients that have cervical spine arthritis to get rid of the pain is to actually remove the remnant of the disc and to fuse the vertebrae together so that instead of having motion there, it's just one fixed block. And the reason that spine surgeons, which I'm not, by the way, full disclosure, my partners do that. I don't do spine surgery. But one of the reasons that spine surgeons can do that is because there are so many levels of movement at the spine that even if you fuse one, two, or more levels, the patient can still turn his or her neck and bend and so on. Mm-hmm. So Keith, you're asking whether there are alternatives. Certainly, yes, there are alternatives. And, you know, the first step, of course, is to see an orthopedic surgeon, which I assume you've done.
Yes. The
non-operative treatments for cervical spine arthritis or radiculopathy, which is a technical, you know, the formal name for pain which radiates down into the arms, includes physical therapy. We also often send patients to our colleagues that do pain management. So the pain management physicians specialize in giving injections into certain areas of the spine that can decrease inflammation.
Do they work?
They do work in many cases. It certainly, you know, it comes
didn't
on a
work
case
for
by
me.
Case. So you know, just like Dr. Shartok and I were talking about injections into the shoulder to get rid of tendonitis in the shoulder, the pain management specialist can do targeted injections into the neck around the specific nerve roots that are being irritated.
Oh, I see.
Okay, listen, we got to go. Thank you very much. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
Support comes from NBT Bank, offering trust and fiduciary services, investment management, and retirement planning for individuals and businesses. NBTBank.com. Ellis Medicine, providing options, support, and help for surgical weight loss at the Ellis Bariatric Care Center, Schenectady, ellismedicine.org. Fort Hill Auto Body, Amherst, Massachusetts, locally owned and operated since 1997, providing auto body repair, detailing, painting, and glass replacement, a proud supporter of public radio, forthillautobody.com. Colby Attorney's Service, document filing, document and information retrieval, and other services including legal publishing and corporate record searches, colbyservice.com. And from Union College Concert Series, presenting the Boston Camerata, making its 26th appearance, the Camerata's annual holiday concert features early Christmas music, Sunday, December 20th at 3 p.m., unioncollegeconcerts.org.
Thank you, Zach. We are back. We'll go to number 5, which is Bill from Cobleskill. Bill, you're on with
Thank
Dr.
You.
Michael
Thank
Schwett.
You,
yep. Okay, sorry
yes,
about
thank
that.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a farmer, and the last few years I've had progressive pain in my shoulders from feeding in the wintertime particularly, and so I have seen an orthopedic, and he's had an MRI, and it shows I have tendonitis, and my question is, is there any way of trying to prevent it from proceeding? Can I strengthen somehow, do exercises and strengthen my shoulder so I don't end up with surgery?
Yeah, absolutely, Bill. The you know, this is Alan and I were talking about this before we came on the air. Tendonitis of the rotator cuff is a very, very common condition, and you're in a profession that involves repetitive use, heavy manual labor, so you're certainly prone to it. if you've been diagnosed with tendonitis, there are a lot of non-operative modalities that we try first before jumping right into surgery. And physical therapy typically aimed at strengthening what we call the parascapular muscles. So the scapula is your shoulder blade. And often we find in people that have rotator cuff tendonitis, it's not the muscles that are actually inflamed that are involved. It's some of the accessory muscles, the muscles that hold the shoulder blade on the back. So when you go to a physical therapy for your shoulder, I don't know if you've done that yet, you may be surprised a physical therapist has you doing sort of back strengthening exercises, not things directed right at the shoulder. But the end result is that the stress is taken off of the tissue that's inflamed. Then moving on beyond that, we had similar questions from a previous caller. Injections can help here. The use of anti-inflammatory medications is really useful in this. You know, sort of a selective short course of anti-inflammatory medications in the right setting is very safe and very helpful. And yeah, most people that have tendonitis do not need surgery. But if it comes to that, there are different options. The arthroscopic surgery, you know, basically surgery through small openings in the skin, half inch big, much less invasive than surgery in the earlier days that was open and had much more prolonged recovery.
Bill, thank you for calling. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah. 1-800-348-2551. Peter in Springfield. Your turn, Peter.
Hi, doctors. My question is when I play very physical sports like basketball or tackle football, every once in a while my arm gets jerked or I push in a certain way and my shoulder feels like it separates or pops out for half a second and then it pops back in. I get a lot of pain and then I'm fine.
Yes. So, Peter, what you're describing is a shoulder subluxation. And orthopedic surgeons make a big distinction between a dislocation and a subluxation. So a dislocation is an event where the whole shoulder ball completely pops out of the socket and typically cannot be put back in place without the help of an emergency room physician and usually some medicine and specialized maneuvers. What you're describing is a subluxation where the shoulder may kind of get perched on the edge of its socket and then spontaneously go back in place. Now, the reason that happens in many cases is that the soft tissue lining of the shoulder capsule, has either been stretched out by previous injuries or that there is actually a tear in the soft tissue capsule, specifically a part of the capsule called the labrum. So the labrum is like a rubbery gasket that deepens the cup to keep the shoulder ball in the socket. And if in fact you have a labral tear, you know, that does not get better on its own. You know, so obviously just like patients that have rotator cuff injuries, we try to treat things non-operatively first with physical therapy, medications, and so on. But if you've had this for a while and failed conservative management, then typically what is done in a case like that is an arthroscopic surgery to either tighten up the shoulder capsule to keep things from partially coming out of place or to fix a torn labrum if that is in fact what you have. The best way to have that diagnosed is to have an MRI, and usually an MRI intra-articular contrast, so you'll have dye injected into the shoulder to see what's really going on.
Or yes. Peter could stop playing football.
You could. But, you know, in orthopedic surgery, our goal is to get people back to the same type of activities that they enjoy doing. And, you know, healthy activities are important for maintaining a healthy lifestyle.
I don't think football's healthy. Everything I'm reading says it's not healthy. Hey, Peter, thanks for the call. Thanks for putting up with us. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, bye. Okay, let us go to Ben in Woodstock. Ben, you're on. You win.
All right. Hey. Awesome. Taking my call.
Thanks.
So I just wanted to ask the doctor what kind of experience you have in how often you use acupuncture in particular as adjunct therapy in your practice.
Well, it's interesting you asked that. I was in the office this morning, and I had a patient come into me. A guy who practices a lot of yoga, and I diagnosed him with a possible meniscal tear in his knee, and he said, you know, I'm going to try some alternative, you know, complementary treatments, and he sought out an acupuncturist, and this patient came back today, and he had an MRI, which showed a very small meniscal tear. The meniscus, just to clarify, is sort of the rubbery cartilage that separates the bones in the knee. And this patient with acupuncture treatment had a relief of his symptoms. So, you know, I'm not aware of a whole lot of studies that scientifically prove that acupuncture works, but I've seen it anecdotally in patients. So, you know, certainly if you've been evaluated by conventional Western physician and gotten a diagnosis, and non-surgical treatment is an option, I think acupuncture is part of that armamentarium of all, you know, non-surgical treatments.
Thank you, Ben from Woodstock. Appreciate your call. All right, let's go to Jim in Adams. Okay, Jim, you're on.
Good afternoon, Alan and Doctor.
Yep.
Hi, Jim.
I wish you could give us the doctor's name and where we can reach him as well as practice.
Okay, Dr. Michael Schwepp, he's going to tell you where to reach him.
Michael?
You can reach me at 845-454-0120. That's Orthopedic Associates of Dutchess County.
845-545.
No, I'm sorry, 845-454-0120.
0120. Okay, Jim, what's your question?
All right. Well, I several years back was chasing my two grandchildren down the beach down in the eastern coast where they live after a supper, and they ran away in the dark, and I was pursuing them down the beach in the fairly dark area, and I came along, I guess, a stretch where there was a little hollow in the beach there. I didn't realize it, and my foot came down too later than I expected it to my right foot, and I severely tore my Achilles tendon, went to my chiropractor, and he treated it with infrared light, laser light, and it actually cured the condition. They said it helps break down the scar tissue that forms after you've torn it, and it helps promote the regrowth of the original, almost original type of elastic type of tissue you had there previously if you tore the tear. And now I'm very active. I can keep away from both of them. They can't put a hand on me yet.
Well,
so I've been through it, and it proved itself to me. And I don't know if you've had any of this in your practice at all, anyone being treated with ultraviolet or laser lights.
So, Dr. Michael Schwepp, what do you think about chiropractic?
Well, you know, chiropractic is a recognized medical practitioner that has, you know, specialized training in treatment of conditions. Traditionally started with the spine. And they have moved into other areas. You know, I see them as complementary, you know, alternative medical practitioners. In my personal experience, I've actually gone to a chiropractor for low back pain and gotten good relief from, you know, a lot of the modalities they use are similar to what our physical therapists do.
Anything with the ultraviolet light or?
You know, I'm not personally up to date on that, but you know, it sounds like you had a good result, and you
excellent.
Can't argue with that.
Excellent result. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Thanks for the call.
Bye bye.
Okay, let us go to Glenn in Albany. Okay, Glenn in Albany, you're on.
Hey guys. Hey, doctor.
Hello, Glenn.
Hey, doc. I have a question. In '97, I had a football injury. I had an ACL, MCL, and a torn meniscus. And,
that's known as the terrible triad. The terrible triad, ACL, MCL, and meniscus tear.
Yeah, I remember when they were looking at the MRIs, the doctor said, oh, looks like a grenade went off in your knee.
Yeah.
But I had the surgery, and at that time it was a newer surgery where they just kind of do the small incision and take the tendon. And, you know, it was newer at the time. And I went on to play soccer and do track and field afterwards. And during my younger years, I never really had any limitations. I did a little bit, but not much. I was able to get back into it. But now that I'm 35, I'm starting to feel like certain limitations that I have on that knee. But let's say if there's a chair and I step on the chair with my left leg, I can feel like certain pains and stuff like that. And the question that I had is, compared to the newer operations that they do now, like when I see in the NFL, they're able to get back within like a couple months now, compared to like 2 years, like what happened with me. Was my operation like more outdated?
Well, I mean, I don't know the exact details of what you had done, Glenn, but, you know, I know in 1997, we were already practicing, you know, as you described, arthroscopically assisted ACL reconstruction. So small incisions, taking a tendon from you, a tendon to replace the torn ligament. And, you know, you say you're 35 now, and you had the surgery back in 97. You know, most likely, you know, without having, you know, examined you and seeing your X-rays and your MRI, I would say you may have developed some what we call post-traumatic arthritis. So typical, you know, osteoarthritis, wear and tear arthritis that everyone gets comes a little bit later in age, 55, 60 and beyond. But if you've had trauma, and it sounds like you have a pretty significant trauma to your knee at that time, That cartilage, the articular cartilage that covers the ends of the bones, was damaged and now may be prematurely, you know, aged, and that may be what's going on. So, you know, as far as your question about the speed that you hear about NFL players getting back to sports, you know, it's just something that I tell my patients, you know, and we do operate on you know, high level college athletes at times. You know, these guys are, you know, at the top of their game, and you know, they're making millions of dollars a year doing their sport. So sometimes they take some risks at coming back sooner than the recreational athlete or even the college athlete, because there's so much riding at it. That I wouldn't say that that's the standard of care yet. We have accelerated the return to sports. You know, you mentioned 2 years. Typically, I have patients going back after ACL surgery, you know, six to 12 months, depending on the sport nowadays.
So, Glenn, my only advice would be not to play football.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks a lot.
All right, I appreciate it.
Okay, and we'll go to Christine in Mount Tremper. Christine, you're on. And we got to make this one quick because we're up against, in 3 minutes, a underwriting.
Okay, I'll be as quick as I can. I have a lot of spinal issues, along with a dystonia that's, you know, curving my spine, scoliosis, degenerative disc disease. I have lousy hips, and because of my poor health, I am not a candidate for surgery. I was wondering, how often can I have cortisone shots before I can't anymore?
Yeah. Well,
I guess they're a red flag issue, period.
Thanks, Christine. The, you know, again, my disclaimer on this is that I'm not a spine surgeon. And in our practice, we have pain management physicians that actually do these injections. And so if you had come to see me in the office, I would refer you to one of them and to answer the specifics of your question. But in general, a steroid injection, cortisone, you know, being the catch-all word for that type of injection, there's not a lifetime limit on it. That's a sort of a misconception. People say, well, I've had, you know, two injections in my knee. I can't have
any more. Well, I've been told that it can do bone damage, bone damage.
It has the potential to soften the articular surfaces, and it can stretch out the ligaments. As long as the surgeon or the doctor who's giving the injection spreads it out over a longer period of time, it should be relatively safe.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys.
Bye. I had it. First time was real good. Second time, okay. Third time, nothing. Just so whatever it's worth, for my back. We'll take a short break. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Saratoga Hospital announcing the completion of its new construction and renovation project, featuring a new intensive care and surgical pavilion with 10 new operating suites. SaratogaHospital.org. Ichiban Japanese and Chinese Restaurant, Central Avenue, Albany. Japanese, Chinese, and sushi bar. Dinner entrees served with soup, salad, and shrimp appetizer. Dine-in, takeout, delivery. 518-432-0358. Lerac announcing their annual holiday shop through December 24th, featuring handmade goods from over 70 local and regional artists. LARAC.org for details. The Urological Institute offering urologic oncology services with prostate specialists using active monitoring protocols designed to help avoid or postpone cancer treatments through imaging and genomic testing. UrologyOncology.com. And from Real Seafood Company, Wolf Road, Colony, offering a new musically-themed Sunday brunch. RealSeafoodCo.com/brunch for menu.
And we're back, thanks to the wonderful Zachary, who really knows what he's doing. Okay. We are here with Michael Schwepp, Dr. Michael Schwepp. He's a board-certified orthopedic surgeon and chief of orthopedic surgery at Northern Dutchess Hospital. Okay, Michael, let's go to Mary in West Fulton. Okay, Mary, you're on.
Hi, I subluxated my clavicle anteriorly at the SC joint, and I'm very active. It's complicated by the fact that I have lupus, but I was told that there's nothing that they can do about it by a number of orthopedists, and then I read online there are there's a procedure where they can pop the clavicle back into place, but that because the connective tissue is overstretched at this point, it'll have the propensity to maybe subluxate posteriorly, and that could be a big problem. What can I do about it? Because my hand goes numb, I'm losing strength in my right hand, I'm very active. What can I do?
Okay, well, thanks, Mary. So first of all, let me just explain to the listeners some of the words. Clavicle is the collarbone, right? And subluxed is, as I mentioned with an earlier caller, is a partial dislocation. So, and you mentioned the SC joint, which is an abbreviation for the sternoclavicular joint. So the sternum is the breastbone, the clavicle is the collarbone. So the joint that you're referring to is where your collarbone meets your breastbone, and the condition you're describing is more common in people like you. I think you said you had lupus. Is that right, Mary?
Yes.
So lupus or different conditions that affect connective tissue can result in this at times, and the orthopedic surgeons that you've seen, you know, gave probably the similar answer that I would have given you if you had come to see me in the office. I know that people at the, you know, some major teaching hospitals are doing surgeries on this joint. It's a tricky area to operate in, and it's one of the things that has to be considered is weighing the risks versus the benefits. You know, because the risks of operating in this area, you're operating directly over the major vessels of the heart, and you know, the possible complications are very high, as opposed to operating at the other end of the clavicle, the other end of the collarbone, you know, where there's not so much important soft tissues around. So, you know, my recommendation for you is maybe to seek out somebody at a teaching hospital, a tertiary care center, and discuss with them. And I'm sure they'll give you the same explanation that, yeah, there are possibly things that can be done, but, you know, you have to weigh the risks and the benefits.
It's I rescue horses, and it really limits me with what I can do. I wake up every night with, pain in my hands from this.
Well, the pain. First of all, I salute you for rescuing horses. I'm involved with the Catskill Animal Sanctuary, so I think that's a great thing. But the pain in the hand, you know, the nerves that come from the cervical spine, from the neck, they usually don't pass directly underneath this area that you're referring to, where the collarbone meets the breastbone. They go a little bit posterior or behind that, and they go through the brachial plexus, which is the bundle of nerves in your armpit. So I'm not sure if the pain in your hand can be directly attributed to what you're describing. So maybe you need to have a further look to see if there's something going on in your neck or in the brachial plexus or in the shoulder that may be causing your pain in your hand.
Mary, got to let you go. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it very much. Okay, we've got a Jean in New Paltz. Jean, you're on.
Hi, doctor. It's so nice to speak with you. On January 16th of this year, I had surgery. It was my right knee, and it was called a lateral tendon release to put my kneecap back in place. I guess it was out of the channel where it needed to be. And since then, I have had to have fluid removed from my knee 4 times, the last time being on July 29th. And it's because I keep having this golf ball size protrusion coming out of the right side of my knee. And the doctor says, well, my surgery was successful. Your kneecap is back in place. And while it doesn't look lovely, it's working and you're not in any pain anymore, which is correct. But I look deformed. I have literally looks like I have a golf ball in my bursa sac on the right side of my knee. And I don't know what to do from here. Am I going to have to live with this the rest of my life?
Yeah, Jean, thanks for this question. This is a pretty common condition called patellofemoral tendonitis or patellofemoral syndrome. So the kneecap, the patella, often doesn't track exactly where it's supposed to track in the end of the femur, the thigh bone. And so what the procedure that you had is called an arthroscopic lateral release. And it is cutting from the inside out some of the ligaments that hold that tend to pull the kneecap over towards the outside, away from your other leg. And yes, what has happened to you is a common occurrence, a common side effect. And whenever I do the surgery on patients, I counsel them ahead of time. I say, you know, a very common side effect is that although your pain may be improved and your kneecap will track better, you'll have some swelling in this area that you describe. And, you know, it sounds like your surgeon maybe didn't explain it to you or that clearly you didn't know that. What I can tell you is that the amount of swelling does tend to go down with time. The swelling is caused by synovial fluid, joint fluid, which the body produces, the knee produces. It's a normal lubricant. And often with irritation, there's an overproduction of that fluid. So, you know, my advice to you, just from, you know, diagnosing you over the radio, is to give it a little bit more time. And typically, the amount of swelling does go down. But I think at the end of the day, you still will be left with a little bit of swelling there. You know, I think the more important thing is that you don't have the pain, you don't have the discomfort.
Right, but you still think it's normal that I could have? It looks like literally there is a golf ball under my skin. Even it will be a year in January.
Yeah,
and it hasn't gone down. And when I had the fluid removed, they removed 25 cc's in July, and within 3 days it was back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think what's happened to you is that the knee has sort of reached this new equilibrium of what it thinks, what the you know, as if the knee could think on its own, but as if the knee thinks that it has to fill that amount of space that's been created by the release. Again, I do think that it will tend to go down with time. You know, 25 cc's, not a huge amount of fluid. You know, we had patients, you know, in the office the other day, we took 80, 100 cc's out.
Wow. Gene, I wish I could give you more time, but I can't. We've got to move
ahead.
That's
okay.
Thanks
you.
Thanks a lot. Bye.
Thanks, Gene.
All right. Have a good
okay.
day. Bye.
Let's go to Beverly in Saratoga. Beverly.
Hi.
Hey.
Hi, Beverly.
Hi, Alan, and hi, Dr. Schwepp. I have a history of juvenile rheumatoid arthritis, and I have a neck pain, that started at the end of June, and they found degenerative osteoarthritis, and they found calcium pyrophosphate deposition disorder in some of the joints. But what they also located on a flexion x-ray is that I have atlantoaxial subluxation. And tomorrow I'm heading toward a CAT scan flexion x-ray to see and measure the amount of subluxation. So my question to you is surgery indicated? Are patients with rheumatoid arthritis, there is a connection between this condition and people with rheumatoid arthritis, and are there alternatives? What do you know about this condition?
Yeah, thanks, Beverly. It's a important question. Rheumatoid arthritis is a systemic condition that attacks, is an autoimmune disease. So the body attacks a lot of the connective tissue, connecting the bones to each other, some of the ligaments and so on. So patients with rheumatoid arthritis often can have problems in their cervical spine and their neck because the soft tissue connections get stretched out. And that's what you're referring to with the atlantoaxial subluxation. That's a subluxation of the first cervical vertebrae, C1, on the second,
yeah.
C2.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is about my extent of knowledge about this. I wish I had my partner, Dr. Rick Perkins, here to talk to you. He's a spine surgeon. I do know that, you know, it sounds like the physicians that are treating you are doing all the right things, setting you for a CAT scan, getting the flexion extension x-rays to try and measure how much subluxation there is. And I do know that ultimately sometimes patients like you end up being recommended to have a surgical fusion. But that is about the extent. I don't want to speak out of turn. I'm not a spine specialist, and, you know, I'd recommend that you speak with a spine surgery specialist.
Okay.
Can I just ask, when you talk about the fusion, are you talking about repairing the transverse ligament that's holding the dens against the vertebra? Is that what you're...
Yeah, no. What typically is referred to as a spinal fusion means actually fusing the bones together. The earlier caller asked about that, and rather than trying to repair the soft tissues, which are stretched out and not repairable, the bones are actually fused together.
And complications that you know about that kind of surgery?
Yeah, I mean, again, I don't do the type of surgery. I don't really want to venture.
Beverly,
okay,
I want to get everybody in. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Beverly.
Okay, we'll go to, now we're going to go to Ken in Ticonderoga. Okay, Ken.
Hey, Doc. I was recommended for a hip replacement by Albany VA this summer. I had some conflicting schedule opportunities that prevented it. I'm going back in for consultation at the end of the month. I got some misgivings about getting a total hip replacement. There's absolutely no cartilage in there. But, yeah, I gained 30 pounds over the years that I've had this condition. And, you know, is there an alternative? There's no cartilage, so, you know, cortisone and the rest of it, physical therapy doesn't make any difference. It just, there's no pain because all the cartilage is gone now. It just clunk, clunk, clunk.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just a little concerned about possible complications of having my hip chopped out and having another one put in. So make me feel better about getting it.
All right, Ken, thanks for the question. Let me just talk a little bit about the condition of hip arthritis so that, you know, the listeners know what we're talking about here. So the hip is a ball and socket joint. The thigh bone, the femur, ends in a ball, and that ball, the femoral head, fits into the acetabulum, which is a cup, a bony cup in the pelvis. Covering the ends of those two bones where they meet is articular cartilage, which I describe to patients as like a Teflon coating that allows the two bony surfaces to glide against each other. When the articular cartilage, when that Teflon-like substance is worn, that's what we call arthritis. That's basically it. And Ken, you're describing a condition where you have no cartilage in your hip. You've probably been told by someone that's seen your X-rays, because that's easily diagnosed on an X-ray. I'll tell you, if you don't have pain, then, you know, the alternative to having a hip replacement is not to have it. You know, the main reason to have a hip replacement or any joint replacement is to eliminate the pain. That's number one goal of joint replacement surgery. Number two is to improve the function somewhat, but that comes second. Most surgeons will tell you that don't expect to have your function so dramatically improve from that. So, I mean, I don't know how old are you, Ken?
63, going to be 64. Used to be real active, biked, walked, hiked, and I haven't done any of that in several years. So yeah, that's what I would like to get back.
I mean, I think Ken, really, just diagnosing you over the radio, imagining you have end-stage arthritis in your hip, you're in the right age group. You know, you were active previously. I think it's a good procedure, and it's not chopping out your hip. It's basically replacing the ball and replacing the socket. Yeah. You keep most of your own tissues.
Hey, Ken, thank you very much. Okay, we'll go to Lenny in Kinderhook. Okay, Lenny, you got to make it fast. We're running out of time.
Yeah, hello there.
Hey.
Hi, Lenny.
Listen, I've got a clicking in my shoulder. I was performing a repetitive task above my head, and it doesn't hurt. When I move it up and down and sideways, it's periodic. Very active, and I don't know if I should see a physician about this or not. I don't know if it's it seems to go from sort of the top of my shoulder across my shoulder blade in town.
Well, Lenny, this is a great question. One of the most common questions I get in the office is, you know, I've got this noise in my shoulder, in my knee, or wherever, and should I be worried about it? And my common comeback question is, well, does it hurt? And if it is not pain associated with a clicking in your shoulder or another joint, I usually tell patients, you know, not to worry about it. There's so many moving parts in your shoulder that it doesn't necessarily have any kind of a negative indication that there's something bad is going on in there.
Okay, well, that sounds good. I don't want to take up anybody's time, and we're your next caller. So
thanks, Lenny.
Thank you so much.
Yep.
Okay, we'll go very, very quickly. I mean, if you can't do it in a couple of seconds, you can't do it, Jenny. Go ahead.
Okay, sometimes I'm walking and my knee won't bend, and I have to think about making it bend. Plus, it buckles on me.
Yeah, so Jenny, the medical term for that is called internal derangement of the knee, if we were going to write it down on a piece of paper. And often what causes that is torn soft tissue. So the meniscus, which is a gasket of the knee, or one of the ligaments, the cruciate ligament, could be partially frayed or torn. So it's almost like there's a loose body inside your knee that's causing it to get stuck. And the way to diagnose that is through physical examination and usually MRI examination. You know, it sounds to me, just from your brief description, that you may have a meniscus tear.
If there's no pain, and can I keep riding my bike like I like to do every day?
Well, yes, but something is going on. This is something that I would go to see an orthopedic surgeon about, as opposed to previous caller. I said, you know, if it doesn't hurt, don't worry about it. This
is
a condition where something could be going wrong that could cause further problems in the future.
Okay. All right. Now I have to go to the doctor. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Unfortunately, we're not going to be able to take Rachel's call from Norfolk, Connecticut, and Gail's from New Marlboro, only because we don't have any more time. I want to thank everybody who did call in. Apologize to those left on the line, which I just did. Also like to thank Dr. Michael Schwepp for joining us today. Underwriting support for the Vox Pop comes from Nathan Littower Hospital, Gloversville, New York. Proudly introducing the gastroenterologist specialist of Littower, working to help put patients at ease with colonoscopies for over 100 years. That's old. NLH.org. Thanks again for joining us today on the Vox Pop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Joe Makowitz. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Alan Chartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.